This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, good morning. Good Monday to you. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. You know what we're not going to do today? We are not going to quit in the 3 hours on this show. We are not going to give up in the 3 hours of this show this morning. We are not going to mail it in the 3 hours on this show this morning. Not unlike the Boston Celtics. We are going to give it our all the way through to the final buzzer 3 hours from now when it's all said and done. I can't begin to tell you how frustrating that was last night. For the desperation of a team going into game three, knowing they need to win, giving up the first two games at home, knowing they need to win, knowing that no NBA team has ever come back from a 3-0 deficit, and the Celtics completely mailed it in and collapsed and quit. They went with Derek White at the beginning of the game. They wanted to go to a small lineup, which I can totally understand why Joe Mazzulla was trying to mix maybe something up. But the moment it wasn't working, the moment Duncan Robinson was driving the lane and laying the basketball up in a wide open paint, or Gabe Vincent knocking down three-pointers, Jimmy Butler had 2 points in the second quarter. He was passing the ball to everybody. The flow of the Miami Heat offense was like they were playing in the YMCA. The Celtics were absolutely bombed out of the building last night, just bombed out of the building in a desperation game. This is now going to be the Miami Heat, an 8 seed, winning the Eastern Conference, and very likely the Denver Nuggets winning the Western Conference as the number 1 seed. The Celtics just puked on themselves. And you know what? I was torn between two emotions last night. Because having grown up in New England and having a fondness for the Celtics, I had two things to watch last night. One, I was pointing this out to Robert on Facebook, who reached out to me on Facebook. I wanted to give up on the game. I just wanted to turn it off and watch something else and we're getting completely destroyed. Sitting in the fourth quarter, they had Tatum and Brown on the bench in the fourth quarter, completely gave up. But at the same time, I didn't want to disrespect Miami. Trying to cover this series in an objective way, I didn't want to disrespect the Heat. It's one thing when you're a fan to go, I'm not watching any more of this. It's too much. I can't stand it. They're getting obliterated. They're getting obliterated in every single quarter. But on the flip side of it, I'm also then going, but I am watching the brilliance of the Miami Heat and the efficiency of this Miami Heat team that is doing it with guys not named Jimmy Butler. That was what's great about it last night. Jimmy Butler wasn't the leading scorer. Gabe Vincent was the leading scorer. Butler had, was dishing out. He had 6 assists on the night. He was facilitating everybody else. It was Max Strus. It was Duncan Robinson. It was Gabe Vincent. And it was Eric Spoelstra getting the most again out of this team. So on the one hand, it was very difficult to watch, to see a desperate Celtics team, knowing what they knew, to just give up. Just give up. I mean, using the word quit is a harsh word to give to a team or an athlete, to say they quit on something. Sometimes you live to fight another day. Sometimes you battle, but it's too much, and you pull people out. We've talked about this all playoffs. Sometimes the final score is 26 points when, at the beginning of the fourth quarter, it was 13. And they got it to 10, and then that was it. And then at the end of the game, the winning team went on like a 12-0 run and extended the lead, but none of the starters were in the game. Sometimes those situations happen. This was not that. This was a 26-point victory by Miami that was pretty much a 26-point lead, a 30-point lead throughout the entire, starting in about the second quarter when they started to pull away. From that point on, it was double-digit lead and stayed that way. What a mess. What an absolute mess. And it could cost Joe Mazzulla his job. In all likelihood, it could. If they get swept in this series, Brad Stevens is going to ask himself a very difficult question, whether Joe Mazzulla was ready to take this team to where it needed to go. It's one thing, again, when we go back to why Mazzulla got the job in the first place. It was an unexpected promotion, given that he was an assistant in Ime Udoka. Ime Udoka was hired prior to last season, first-year head coach. He takes the Celtics to the NBA Finals. They lose to Golden State. Mazzulla is expected once again to be an assistant in the second year of Ime Udoka. But then in the offseason, Udoka gets in trouble with the organization for having an inappropriate relationship with a woman on staff, a woman he had a superiority on in the hierarchy of the company. He said some things he shouldn't have said to her. And so Mazzulla is thrusted into the role. Now, he's an interim coach, right? Because it's late towards the start of the season. He's an interim coach, but he does so well in the regular season, which what teams tend to do. And they give him the full-time job. They give him a full contract. But the proof is going to be in this pudding, not in the regular season. The proof is going to be whether or not you can fight and battle through a seven-game playoffs series against teams that are figuring you out as you are figuring them out. And it has been an embarrassment for the Celtics in this series against the Heat. And this is what, again, if you've been following the Eastern Conference at all, this is what Boston has been doing all playoffs. You get in this series with Atlanta to open up the postseason, and what do? You can't close them out at home in a game five. You got to fly all the way down to Atlanta for game six. You know, a series that should have been wrapped up pretty quickly to give you enough chance to take a breather. Nope, they can't do it. We lose game. Trae Young and company beat us at our own home court. And then they have to battle back from a 3-1 deficit against Philadelphia. And luckily, Philadelphia's choke job is more impressive than their ability to get back into the series. And they win that in seven, but they couldn't close out Philadelphia at all, trailing 3-2. And then in this Miami Heat, they've not been in any of these games. Miami has controlled game 1 and 2. And now they demolish them in game 3 when they know exactly what's coming out. Now, is it possible that Mazzulla is underprepared for this and that Brad Stevens sees himself in Joe Mazzulla? Maybe. But I'll repeat the story of Brad Stevens, because I think it's going to have Brad Stevens is going to have this mindset going into a decision on Joe Mazzulla, which is, you know what? I was a young guy too. I was hired into a situation in Boston where they were rebuilding. Danny Ainge hired me. It wasn't said, but it was kind of believed by many that he would be the coach until they really found their coach. And the trade-off was Stevens would get NBA experience on a bad basketball team. And then, you know, when they built it up again, quite possibly somebody else would be the head coach of the team to lead it to where it was supposed to go. But Stevens flipped that switch. He actually had the bad team playing really well, and he got the most out of that team, so much so now Brad Stevens runs the Celtics. But Joe Mazzulla may not be the right guy. I get the strategy of trying to put Derek White back in the lineup and going small, maybe mix it up a little bit, take Robert Williams out, put Derek White in, but it was not working. It clearly wasn't working, and then that was it. Now, on the flip side of that, so there's an 0-3 deficit for the Celtics to overcome, and likewise, there's the same situation in Los Angeles. And they're going up against this Nuggets team. And Denver is one win away from their first ever NBA Finals. And look, I tend to believe in these trends, but I know that eventually a trend is going to break, right? In the NCAA tournament, for example, we saw so many times a 16 seed come close to beating a 1. We saw it a couple of times enough for us to say one day it'll happen. And then it did happen. And then it happened again. And it's very likely that it'll happen again, again, and again. Overcoming a 3-0 deficit has only happened once in professional sports, and that was the Red Sox beating the Yankees. And baseball is such a different beast. Because in baseball, again, if you get strong starting pitching, it changes everything. And in basketball, you're making adjustments to their adjustments, to their your adjustments, to their adjustments, and it goes back and forth. But you're playing the same people, right? So if you are in baseball, if again, you get three solid outings, you've tied up the series. But in basketball, you've got to find ways to do different things and produce results, and you hope that they're not on to what you're changing and how to counteract your moves. It's a different beast in order to get back into a 3-0 deficit, from a 3-0 deficit. And it's time to acknowledge that maybe, just maybe, very similar to what we saw in the Phoenix Suns series, that Denver is just built better for this than the Lakers are. That we saw this with Phoenix, where acquiring Kevin Durant, going playing only 8 regular season games, and beating a Clippers team that was shorthanded, just maybe was too much to ask of a Suns team that was down Chris Paul, then later down DeAndre Ayton, to fight a Denver Nuggets team that was healthy, had been playing together for a long time, built together for a while. Maybe it was just too much to ask. In a similar situation, maybe it's just too much to ask of this Lakers team to beat a Denver Nuggets team that's really good. Now, why aren't people gravitating towards the Nuggets? Why aren't people gravitating towards finally saying, you know what, this team's really good? It's taken a while because of this. Nobody watched the Disney World bubble. It was at the wrong time of the calendar. Remember, they were playing in the fall. Football was back. It wasn't back in the way, you know, we see it today, but remember during COVID of 2020, it was back trying to put together the weekly schedule, college football and the NFL. They're playing in front of limited fans, if any fans, but it was consistent. It was the most normal sporting thing that we had. And meanwhile, the NBA was trying to put this bubble together. The Nuggets played well in that bubble, but nobody watched them. And then the next 2 years, they were out of the playoffs rather quickly and rather efficiently by their opponent. And by the way, the NBA media was telling everybody, oh, by the way, Denver's got a 2-time MVP. And most of America was going, yeah, but I never saw him play. So the Nuggets are a complex team because they're very good, but nobody pays attention to them. All right, we'll talk about that, plus a PGA Championship won by Brooks Koepka. So let's the conversation about LIV Golf continue.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so again, the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference Finals, dominating by one team, Miami and Denver. Does this put an end to anybody's conspiracy theorists?
Yeah.
They're trying to get LeBron into the finals?
They want Celtics and the Lakers into the finals.
You know, I think that comes up every single time these two teams are making a deep run.
Yeah.
It always comes up, oh, they want Lakers-Celtics, and which obviously would be much better TV ratings than Denver-Miami.
Right.
But, you know, Denver and Miami didn't get the script.
Yeah, this is not the ideal for the NBA if you want big-time exposure to the finals, but it's what you're going to get.
Yeah, it's what
you're getting Miami-Denver.
I mean, you know, you have the Celtics quitting. You have the Lakers throwing everything they have at Denver.
It's you know what, you know,
and
what,
the leading Western games and then losing it, you know, in the fourth quarter. It's just remarkable.
The Western Conference Finals reminds me of that story George Foreman tells when he fought Muhammad Ali, where he goes, I'm punching him, and Muhammad looks at me and he goes, is that all you got, George?
Yep.
And I go, yep, that's all. That's pretty much it. That's all I got. Like, that's the Lakers. They're giving Denver everything they have.
I mean,
everything they have. And Denver finds a three, or they find a shot from somebody else, or Jamal Murray pours in 12 points in a quarter or something.
They get hot right at the right moment.
Right at the right moment.
And then it demoralizes the Lakers. It just deflates them completely. There's nothing they can do.
Absolutely. Again, it's like, well, that's it. Yeah, that's about it. That's all we got. We've emptied the barrels. We can't. There's nothing more we can do.
I mean, I'm not sure, and I'm sure the stat has been thrown up, and maybe I missed it, but if it hasn't, hey, stat guys, throw this stat up. What's their shooting efficiency in the fourth quarter
with five minutes to go? Great point. Because that's when they put on their best shooting.
Yeah, because honestly, it's got to be in the 80s or 90s at this point.
Everything. Saturday night was a perfect example. Anytime the Lakers would push that, somebody was finding somebody open for a three-pointer in the corner. That was it.
I mean,
happened every time.
Yeah. And then that, which, and then what happens? It forces the Lakers to make poor decisions, bad shots, and yeah, game over.
Exactly. It's one of those scenarios where you just go, all right, you know what, this year they're just the better team.
Yeah,
Denver is just the better team. There's another point about it. In the Eastern Conference Finals, while I can say that given Miami's dominance, I'm going to put more emphasis on the Celtics blowing this and blowing the series and looking bad than I am on the Lakers. The Lakers, you're right. I feel like the Lakers have put out great efforts. Yes, they've made some mistakes, no doubt, but they're playing a team that's probably better than them. I don't know if the Celtics are better than Miami, like on paper, but the Heat know exactly the buttons to push to get the Celtics to play some really crappy basketball. And that's what's happening in the Eastern Conference. Back to what I was saying about the Nuggets, I do think there's some validity to this, because I was trying to explain this to a friend of mine about Nikola Jokic, because he knows I'm from, you know, I lived in Denver for a long time, and he was like, he goes, I just don't know about the Nuggets. I just don't. And I go, yeah, it's because nobody watches them. I mean, they're not on TV. So again, yeah. it's not. Look, when my Nuggets friends, when my friends in Denver go on Twitter and complain about America not knowing the Nuggets, it's not on them. The league has not promoted this team or gotten the networks to put this team on TV enough. But because what we do sometimes is, and I tell my friends this a lot in the business, you've got to forget that we're not talking to people like us, right? Like you're talking, like people who watch a ton of NBA, follow the NBA, dive over box scores. You're talking to a guy that's got a mortgage. He barely can follow his local team. Maybe he lives in an area of the country where his favorite team is 500 miles away. He's trying to cover that. But, the local team is also in the news. And he's not watching every game. He's not up until midnight watching TNT. He's not listening to Ernie, Shaq, and Charles Barkley with Kenny the Jet Smith breaking down how good the Indiana Pacers are when he lives in Albuquerque. So when the Nuggets aren't on TV and they're not promoted very well, it's very difficult for a lot of America, even casual NBA fans that turn up their attention this time of year, to know exactly who's on the team. And then as I said earlier, the league, the people who know the league, they tell America and America's sports fans, oh, Nikola Jokic, yeah, he's the MVP twice. And again, that same guy that's driving to work every morning in Albuquerque, who's trying to figure out a way to follow his Charlotte Hornets, is like, I haven't seen him do anything. Like, I don't watch him do anything. And as I said earlier, their best moment in the postseason with Nikola Jokic was in the bubble. And who watched the – I don't think you and I watched the bubble, for crying out loud.
Nah.
Like, it was barely, like, you, how could you pay attention to the bubble when it was during football season? Like, it was in the fall. The deep playoffs. So nobody's watching the bubble. The Nuggets then get into the postseason, and what happens? They lose to Phoenix in four games in the conference semifinals. They get out of the first round by Golden State. That's where the money is made. That's where the attention is had. That's where you can make names for yourselves. So America was told Nikola Jokic is a two-time MVP, and they're like, show me, because I haven't really I'm not watching this. And they're like, yeah, you should have watched the bubble. Yeah, you know why I wasn't watching the bubble? Because the NFL was on and college football was on. So no, I'm sorry. I wasn't watching the Disney World empty arena piped in sound bubble with cardboard figures in the stands. So sorry I wasn't tuned into that showcase, clown show, funhouse. And that's basically what we had. So now the Nuggets are great. They're great. That's a great team. And Jokic is putting up insane numbers. And when he doesn't play particularly well, Jamal Murray plays great. Like, I wouldn't say game three was his best effort. But doesn't matter. Jamal Murray pours in 37 or whatever he had. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's hitting threes. Bruce Brown is hitting shots. Michael Porter's doing that. The whole team is contributing. Now you're seeing it. And them and whoever, Miami and the Miami Heat are going to be an interesting finals, but I wonder if America cares. I really do.
I mean, it's going to be fun to watch. Jokic and Butler.
I think so too.
But
I think,
no, we're going to watch, obviously.
Right.
But I might be half watching.
Yeah.
That's the problem. If there's competitiveness, there's competitive games going on. Yeah, you'll have my attention. But there's, I don't know. I just feels like there's no real star power.
Well, that's the
problem. That's the problem. Yeah, that's exactly what you're talking about.
But you're talking about again a Miami Heat team and a Denver Nuggets team. Miami's a nice city and Denver's a nice city, but it ain't Boston, LA, right? And so if you're the league, this isn't the matchup you want.
Yeah, I mean for the league, I mean, they would even take a Boston, Denver, L.A., Miami.
Yeah, sure.
At least get one of those.
They would definitely take L.A., Miami, without question.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Sunshine and fun and LeBron going back to Miami. They'd love it. They'd love it. But they had that in the bubble. Nobody watched the bubble. The bubble, it was a hard time. It just didn't feel, I don't know.
It was a weird time for everything.
It was. It's like when they tell you, hey, when you buy the Lucky Charms in the big bag that's like Lucky Charmlets or whatever, it's the same thing, but it doesn't feel like the same thing because it doesn't have the leprechaun on the box. It's like that. It's like the bubble was NBA basketball, but it felt like it was on the lower shelf of the cereal rack, right? It was like two bags for $3.
Yeah.
That's what the bubble was. The bubble was LeBron James and Nikola Jokic and Jimmy Butler and the Celtics and Jason Tatum. But it didn't feel like it. It didn't feel like the same thing. It was in this weird arena and nobody was there and they're piping in crowds and they were playing like four games a day in the same place and it was during football season and football was, as I mentioned earlier, football wasn't played in a different place. Like, they didn't all gather in Kansas City and play at Arrowhead Stadium, and they're playing every night of the week. And they were trying to have games on Sunday in the real stadiums and controlling who was there and whatnot. But it was supposed to be the normal sports season because we had a number of months of COVID. It was too manufactured in the Disney World bubble to have people pay attention to it. So if your name was being made there, it's, and like we said, the Lakers championship was legit. It's legit. It's a legit title. It just may feel different to a lot of people. But the Nuggets, they're coming back from 2-3-1 deficits in that series to play in the Western Conference Finals. If a tree falls in a forest and nobody's around to hear it, doesn't make a sound. That didn't make a sound. Nobody remembers it. Nobody cares about it. And now they're waking up to the fact that Nikola Jokic is the best player in the world and the Nuggets team is the best team in the NBA. And like you said, the Lakers gave everything they've had in this series and it's not good enough because the Nuggets are better. All right, we'll get to the PGA Championship. Brooks Koepka the winner, and what does it mean for LIV, Ryder Cup, and all that coming up next.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsmap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. By the way, did you see any of the NBA on TNT when they afterwards?
No, I missed it.
Gabe Vincent said, the Celtics are a really good team. They're talking about him after the game. He's doing that cliche thing, respecting his opponent. He goes, Celtics are a really good team. They're not going to lay down. And Charles Barkley goes, did you watch tonight's game? You played in it. Yeah, the Celtics did lay down. Yeah, PGA Championship wrapped up. Yeah, No one laid down there. Brooks Koepka with the win.
Yep.
A two-shot win over Victor Hovland and Scottie Scheffler at Oak Hill. Finally, the sun was shining at Oak Hill. That was good because rain and mud and all the nasty weather was coming down throughout the week until Sunday. And Koepka wins his fifth major. And by the way, this is rarefied air. We're going to talk to Jay Coffin coming up in 15 minutes about this. This is rarefied air. I mean, he's got the same amount of majors now as Seve Ballesteros. I mean, in 15 years, are we going to talk about Brooks Koepka as one of the greatest golfers who have ever played the game? I mean, look, five majors is... Phil Mickelson was on five majors for a while, remember?
Yep.
He won three Masters and three Masters, a PGA, and a British Open. That was it. Until he was 50, and then he won his sixth. But he had five majors for a long time. And now Brooks Koepka has it, and probably will have a couple more because he seems to be liking the major championship. So this is my question now. And this is basically, if you're a player, if you're a golfer that is okay with LIV and the Saudis and the human rights and all that stuff, like a lot of people like myself, I don't like LIV because I don't like who backs it. I don't like what this is about, the sports washing. And as I've said many times, I'm a fan of Formula One. Formula One has a race in Saudi Arabia. Every time Formula One goes to Saudi Arabia, there's all sorts of comments from drivers who drive for their teams and they've got a race, but they don't like it. And it's the whole what are we doing here kind of larger picture. But if you're a golfer that's like, no, I'm at peace with that. I'm not a politician. I just want to play golf. Don't you think now Brooks Koepka is in a position where he's like, look at my life and tell me what's wrong with it, right? I now get exemptions into the majors because I'm a PGA champion. I'm a U.S. Open champion, and I get to play in the Masters. I get to play in the British Open, so I get to play in the majors because I'm exempt from them. And now when I'm not exempt from them, instead of going to the RBC Heritage that I don't care about, or the AT&T Byron Nelson that I don't care about, or any of these other tour stops that I don't care about, I'm going to go to LIV and make $200 million. Like that like now
playing he's, 3 days.
Yeah, exactly. Playing 3 days in shorts.
See, that's what I'm curious to see if the PGA comes up with something stupid. You know, just like whatever it might be to keep LIV players out. Maybe it's like, oh, you didn't play enough holes to qualify
for
a major event. I mean, they could do that for the PGA Championship, but...
No, they can't.
They can't do it?
Actually, the PGA Tour doesn't run any of the four majors. The PGA is Professional Golfers Association, which is a separate entity than the PGA Tour. But they can put pressure on these organizations as a major golf entity, but I don't know if they will. And so you watched Koepka compete at the Masters. He won the PGA. You know, you had Patrick Reed be competitive at the Masters. Bryson DeChambeau was in contention. I mean, some of these LIV golfers, Phil Mickelson was in contention at the Masters. He did make the cut, but he kind of finished at the bottom of the PGA. Now you're talking about a lifestyle where, again, if I'm a golfer on the PGA Tour, I'm like, okay, wait, hold on. If I can qualify for these majors, then why don't I just do... I think that's one of the reasons why a Dustin Johnson, a Patrick Reed, a Brooks Koepka, Phil Mickelson, they're jettisoning over to the LIV Tour because there's built-in exemptions into the majors that they like. Mickelson doesn't have to worry about the Masters. He can play there until he dies. British Open, you can play there until, like, I think you're 60. So... Like
but who was the one that couldn't play? The name escapes me. We talked about it.
There are golfers that can't play because they haven't qualified, and LIV doesn't allow you to qualify.
But there was one where the guy, he seemingly had qualified for everything. I don't know if it was for the Open, though. U.S. Open. And they changed the rules.
Name's drawing a blank, yeah. But if you play, like if you're Taylor LaGooch, right?
Right.
And you don't have a Masters title or a major championship. So what they're arguing, what LIV is arguing is that Taylor LaGooch won two events on the LIV Tour, but they don't count towards world ranking points. And world ranking points is what gets you into majors when nothing else gets you into majors. So they're saying, look, this kid is a great golfer. Why can't he be in the majors? And those organizations still have yet, that the world golf rankings have yet to acknowledge LIV events to give them enough points. So these guys are plummeting down the world ranking order, and it's by no fault of their own other than they play on a tour that's not recognized. So, but if you're a Brooks Koepka and you're like, I'm going to get to go to the Masters for a while. I'm going to get to go to the PGA for a long time. I'm going to get to go to the US Open for a while. I'm going to get to the British Open because I qualify. This is my dream. This is my thing. I'm making a ton of money playing pretty much exhibition golf because I don't like the tour events. He said many times when he was on tour, I don't play well at other places. I only want to play in the majors. That's how the sport is defined. Nobody cares how many wins you have at Colonial. I mean, Colonial's a great tournament. Ben Hogan got it started. But nobody cares how many times you've won that or TPC River Highlands or even Jack's tournament in Muirfield Village. What they care about is how many majors do you have? He has a trophy case in his house for nothing but major. He leaves it empty for because he's like, this is only place that only the major winners get put in this trophy case. And now he gets to put another one there. So for him, it's like, all I care about is the majors and I get to play in them. So when I'm not playing in the majors, why don't I make $200 million and play for the LIV? I'll, you know, like I said, in three no-cut events, where I'll make a couple million bucks per appearance. Great. And that's, and that, again,
and
if
then if
you're
my team
okay
wins,
with this, yeah.
If my team wins, I still get money.
Exactly. And again, if you're, again, this is only if you're okay with the sports washing angle of what the Saudi-backed tour is trying to do, really, in the larger picture of it. If you made peace with that in some way, and there are golfers who don't, who won't make peace with that, so they're like, no, I'm not part of that. But that's Brooks Koepka. But man, the star of the show is Michael Block, the touring teacher, the club pro. They knocked a hole in one in on Sunday. You see how nuts they went?
Yeah.
That's a Bills Mafia crowd, man.
The best tweet I saw, though, was just like, you know, he's writing his Disney movie.
He is writing his Disney movie.
Yeah, which exactly. Because we use that as a cliche for everything.
He's like Tin Cup.
It's like, this one is a Disney movie, though.
Yeah, he's Tin Cup.
And it does have a feel-good ending that you didn't have to fabricate.
It was that shot on 18, his up and down on 18 was fantastic. He threw that second shot into the crowd.
He won the tournament, didn't he?
And yeah, like he threw that second shot. They're moving people so he could get to his ball. That was like way to the left.
Kind of reminds me of that scene in Happy Gilmore, like towards the end, you know, when they're interviewing Shooter McGavin, but everyone's hanging out with Happy.
Right.
Kind of feel that way for Brooks, right?
Yeah.
it's like, yeah, didn't I win this thing? Oh, yeah, but what'd you think of? What'd you think of him? What'd you think of this shot? What'd you think? You know, asking everything about him.
Yeah, Michael Block. So if you aren't familiar with the PGA Championship, so the PGA Championship is unlike the other three majors in that it is only professional golfers that play in it. Hence the PGA Professional Golfers of America. So there's no amateurs. There's no college kid. There's none of that stuff. It's only PGA professionals, but they keep a certain allotment of in the field to PGA teaching pros. So these are the guys at your local course that offer lessons for like $100 for half an hour or something like that. And they manage the golf shop and they're the local pro. And so there's 20 of them that through can you know, playing and whatnot can qualify for this thing. Now most don't make the cut. Most they show up. They don't play. A lot of these guys don't play competitive golf at all. Some of them get into local tournaments. I know he played a lot of local Southern California tournaments, but some of them barely do it. So they go there. They just have a good time. They wave the flag for the teaching pro, and then that's it. This guy was in contention. He was in like the fourth final group of the day. So you go four down, and he's in that group. He's playing with Rory McIlroy. Played with Justin Rose, I think, on Saturday. But he played great, and so what happened is there's this underdog 46-year-old guy that no one ever heard of, and he's a teaching pro, and he's not a tour pro, and he's playing with the big boys, and he's doing great, and there was this natural attraction to him. And the fact that it's in Rochester, New York, which is not far from Buffalo, and you've got sort of this raucous crowd energy anyway, and it led to some really exciting stuff. Michael Block, he had a hole in one and didn't believe it. And Rory McIlroy is telling him it's a hole in one. He's like, no. The crowd is losing its mind. What do you think they're losing their mind for? Because you hit it within 2 feet. He gets there. The hole's all damaged up. He had to fix the hole. Hole in one. He makes the. He gets to be invited to next year's PGA Championship at Valhalla, finishing in the top 15. Talk to Jay Coffin all about it next.
With Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, let's go to our Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, for a job you'll love, visit progressive.com/careers. And also, drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. Jay Coffin joins us, Coffin Corner Media, on the PGA Championship held at Oak Hill Country Club in Rochester, won by Brooks Koepka, who had a two-shot victory over Victor Hovland and Scottie Scheffler. How are you, Jay?
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Well, if you talk about the Masters having Augusta National and the familiarity with one golf course and the U.S. Open being the toughest test and the British Open being its oldest and the more worldly tournament with weather being a factor, what does the PGA try to identify as, and did it do that this weekend?
Well, you know, I think if we look back over the last 10 years, the PGA historically, it just sort of stinks, is known as the fourth major, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in this day and age of ranking and things, somebody has to be the fourth. That's just kind of what we do. And everybody's first can be different. That's fine. First, second, and third can be different. It typically has been the fourth. It used to be the last one in the year, so by nature it was. But I think this move to May has really given it a little bit more of an identity. And honestly, if you look back and you're being honest and you just sort of looked at results and how it happened and set the major aside, over the last 10 years, the PGA has brought the most drama, the most excitement. It really has. There's been a couple clunkers in there. There usually is. But you know what? It's really brought the drama wherever it's been. The golf courses are set up beautifully. You never hear players complaining about the setup. You just don't. It's tough but fair. They can live with that. It's never tricked up. It's never goofy. It's one of the strongest fields in golf. And the players show up, and magic tends to happen. It's crazy.
So Brooks Koepka now wins major number 5, third PGA championship, along with the two U.S. Opens. There's no career Grand Slam here yet, but what does 5 majors put you in a category as a golfer?
Yeah, this is rarefied stuff, man. This is he's now one of 20 men to win 5 or more majors in the world, on the planet, ever. 20. A group of 20.
Wow.
And, I mean, that number, I mean, just say it a couple times fast, 20. it's crazy. It's as many as Seve Ballesteros. It's as many as some of the legends of the game, a group of 20. You could have over for dinner at your house. It's so such a small group of people that, you can try to put it into perspective, but that really is the best number that you can come up with. Now, he's only joined Jack and Tiger as the only guys to have ever won 3 PGA championships in the stroke play era. There are a couple other guys, Walter Hagen, back when it was match play, but he's joined Tiger Woods and Jack as the only ones to have won 3 or more PGAs. So you start adding these things up, and it's nuts. And it's weird because, like, when he's on 4, you know, Rory's on 4 and Jordan Spieth's on 3. And, you know, you sort of look at him as a group of among equals of his current peers, right? But then when he wins 5 and you see what category that one extra puts him into, it's lunacy.
Yeah, so here's Brooks Koepka, and we were kind of talking about this earlier, where he's a guy that's admitted that the PGA Tour, when he was on it, wasn't attractive to him. It was the majors. He dialed his game up for the majors. So now that he's on LIV, if you can put the sports washing thing and live with it, isn't he in the best situation for his life? He plays a three round tournament with no cuts, makes $200 million or whatever he's getting paid. He gets into these majors because he's winning the majors, and that's really all he cares about anyway.
I would say probably. I still question the motivation. It's weird, not his motivation,
right?
The overall motivation for some of the other guys to how competitive do they feel like they have to be when they already have the money up front? The other guys, Dustin Johnson, maybe Bryson. I don't question that with Brooks, right? Because of what you said, because of the majors. So I think, yes, I think of all the guys that jumped, you can make a strong, strong case, a strong argument that it has served him the best because he got paid all that crazy money. He only has to play 3 days, and it's allowed his body to heal and rest. And do we put too much, and have we historically put too much on having to play a lot and playing your way into shape, into a major? That used to be what Tiger used to do and what, you know, sort of was the narrative around these bigger events. But I think Brooks is showing it doesn't matter. If I only play 4 times a year and it's only the 4 majors, I'm going to show up and I'm going to try to pound everybody into the ground.
Does this carry weight with LIV? I mean, look, it's Brooks Koepka. He plays well in majors. But if, like, Taylor Gooch had won this thing or somebody else that you wouldn't expect and he was on LIV, would it carry more weight or is the weight about the same? LIV's going to take advantage of this notoriety now.
I think it's probably the same. I think, yeah, to your point, if it was somebody else, I think they would, you know, it would be, look, they're happy. I mean, how could Live Golf not be
right,
happy?
Sure.
You know, one of their guys, it happened in only the, you know, really the second major since it's been a full bore tour. I mean, that's crazy. And they've capitalized on it and they're jumping on it. Will we see a spike because of it? Are more people going to watch on TV? I question that. I think no. I think if it was somebody else, you're right. And also, too, if you look at it, Brooks has still sort of been his own guy despite Liv. And that may not be the best terminology, but this is what I mean. He's not really been full bore Liv. He's still wearing Nike gear at Liv events. He's not wearing gear as one of those teams. He's not been in all this bickering and arguing and still seems to be relatively good friends with Rory and some of the guys down south that he lives near. And so he's kind of been above it all, above all the bickering and all the little pettiness that's gone on over the last year. So I think that helps him too when he does this. And I think it maybe quiets some of the Liv talk about it being good because he's kind of risen above it for the last year, if that makes any sense.
Let's talk about Michael Block. Okay, so for people who don't know, how does a guy like Michael Block get into this thing? And because it is a PGA and they do honor the teaching pros, how do you get in? And what do we make of his story?
Yeah, this is insane. I mean, if Brooks didn't win and Victor Hovland won, Michael Block probably would have been the bigger story.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But it just happened to be Brooks and he got his fifth major. So Michael Block is a teaching professional. He's a club professional. You can go to his club out in California, pay him $150 in another week, and he will give you an hour lesson. That's what he does. He's a member of the PGA of America, which runs this event, not the PGA Tour, the PGA of America. So part of that, part of them sort of, you know, spurring on their membership, there is a national club pro championship where you can qualify as a club professional at a local club, and the top 140 players go play in that event. The top 20 players in that event qualify for the PGA Championship. It is kind of nuts, but it's the PGA of America's deal, and that's what they do. So he's played in five of these. He showed up. That championship was just played a couple weeks ago, and he showed up and and did his thing, insanity, playing with Justin Rose and Rory McIlroy on the weekend and the hole in one and the putt on the last hole to guarantee him in next week or next year and then get an exemption into playing the PGA Tour this week. Like, you literally cannot make it up. The movie script, you know, if you wrote it like this and handed it to somebody, they would say, get out of here. Nobody's going to believe
it. No doubt.
It's nuts. It's,
absolutely.
It's a real life 10 cup. It's a real life 10 cup.
Let's talk about Victor Hovland for a second. I've seen these guys where you go, man, they're close, but sometimes they close the deal and sometimes they don't. Victor Hovland seems like somebody that's going to close the deal eventually. What do you make of his game and his week?
I agree. I was talking to somebody last night about this too, and he's such a likable young guy, 25 years old, likable, always has a smile, very honest. Remember a couple years ago he was talking about how awful his short game was. And just really an open, honest, likable young guy. Really, really like him. Really respect him. I agree. You feel like he's going to get it done. But it's also, you know, I mean, remember back when Martin Keimer won the U.S. Open?
Yeah.
You know, 8 years ago by 9 shots, and we thought he was going to win 6. He hasn't done anything.
Yeah.
Like, you just don't know. I mean, would it surprise me if he won 4 majors? No. Would it surprise me if he wins 0 majors? A little bit. But like, that's what this game is like, right? I mean, Phil Mickelson didn't win one until he was the age that Brooks Koepka is now.
Yeah.
He didn't.
Sergio is the outlier. Sergio is the one for me, Jay. I thought Sergio would win 10 of them by the time he turned 30.
Going to be the best European golfer ever, right?
Right?
Better than Nick Faldo, better than Seve, better than all those guys. Wasn't. So you have to capitalize on the ones that are there in front of you. He has not yet. I feel like he will. I hope he does. You just never know.
Yeah, Jay, great stuff. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on a busy Monday after the PGA. Appreciate it, my man.
No problem. Have a great week.
You got it. Jay Coffin, Coffin Corner Media is where you can find him and analysis on the not only PGA but golf in general. Again, Brooks Koepka winning his fifth major, and like he said, 20 people in the history of the game. That's the category now he is in of 5 major championships or more. That's Brooks Koepka. And again, you're talking about the Justin Thomases and the Jordan Spieths and Rory McIlroy and all these golfers. that burst onto the scene, and it's this kid who acts like, I don't even care about golf. He wins five. He's got five majors. This guy is great. And just think on that.